This is the Daily Dope, presented by The Gaming Gang for Friday, February 3rd, 2012. It's time for another irrelevant look at the gaming news of the day. Welcome back. I'm your host, Jeff McAleer. Hey everyone, it's Friday. Woohoo! I'm sure everyone's looking forward to their weekend, and like most Americans, I'll be kicking it with the Super Bowl on Sunday. Here's my prediction. Patriots 30 and the New York Football Giants 17. Take it to the bank. Well, don't really take it to the bank, as I'm just guessing here, but I think the Pats will win. Anyway, let's get to the news. Nevermore Games today launched a new project on Kickstarter, Chicken Caesar. It's for 3 to 6 players, and they compete to create a legacy for their family's name. Only the family consists of a group of Roman chickens. In Chicken Caesar, players represent aristocratic ancient Roman chicken families trying to create a legacy for their family name. Each family has several eligible roosters eager to jump into the world of politics, getting rich, and creating a legacy by any means necessary. Roosters gain renown for their families by occupying various political offices. Low-ranking officers don't yield much fame, but they hold both the purse strings and the power of the sword. A few roosters in the lower offices of Aedile and Praetor, together with the votes of a few well-paid and temporary allies, can clear a path to luxury and recognition that come with the tenors of censor, consul, and even Caesar. Being Caesar isn't easy, though. Fail to bribe and bargain to ensure the welfare of the whole coup, and today's Caesar is tomorrow's coca bean. Dead roosters don't earn any more points, but they do offer opportunities for their surviving relatives to exaggerate their accomplishments. All that matters in the end is history's judgment, and history can be rewritten. Who will become the Chicken Caesar? Find out at the Chicken Caesar Kickstarter page today. In other Kickstarter news, Viva Java, the coffee game, is all about finding that perfect blend of beans to create the next bestseller in the coffee houses and kitchens of the world. Players will travel to exotic coffee-producing nations around the world to collect beans and gain fame and fortune. But in order to be successful, players will actually have to work together, mostly. Players send their researchers to hotspots around the globe to gather the perfect bean. This may bring them into contact with other players who are also on the hunt, creating a crucial choice. Go it alone and continue to research, or join forces with that opponent, hoping to combine beans from both players' bags and share the score with a super blend. Going it alone with research can often prove useful, as players spend time in the lab developing abilities that grant them an advantage. However, in Viva Java, the bold taste of victory will only go to those players who are able to balance solitary research with cooperation amongst their fellow gamers. The rich depth of varying strategies and social play will satisfy most players' thirst for unique gameplay. But Viva Java has even more brewing. This flexible game can accommodate up to 8 players, and through smooth, simultaneous actions, play is quick and constant with little downtime. Viva Java is already funded on Kickstarter with 26 days to go, but you should take a peek at the game anyway and get on board for the Kickstarter savings. Plus, it comes in a pretty cool looking coffee can. This weekend brings launch party events for Magic the Gathering's Dark Ascension. Dark Ascension, the second card set of the Innistrad block, hits the shelves, and this 158-card small set continues the popular themes and designs in Innistrad, including double-faced cards that transform mid-game. Innistrad has been overrun by creatures of the night. Vampires, werewolves, and zombies run wild across the land. While the forces of good struggle to hold back the threat, villagers cower behind walls and pray for the morning light. In this nightmare world of monsters and dark magic, only the most powerful planeswalkers will survive. Launch party events run through today, February 3rd through February 6th, in the usual formats: sealed deck, two-headed giant sealed, booster draft, and standard. There'll also be the now customary achievement card available while you play, listing a host of cool achievements to attempt in order to heighten the fun. And as befits such a marquee occasion, all participants will receive a promo card, as long as they're still in stock, the Mondranin Shaman / Tovalor's Mage Hunter, whatever that may be. A sudden and unexpected attack has left Mechatol Rex, the galactic seat of power, in disarray. Now the city's ambitious factions have begun their diplomatic and military maneuvering, each hoping to seize authority when the dust settles. Through negotiation and guile, one great race will decide the fate of the galaxy. But who will it be? The rules for Rex, the board game of negotiation and warfare for 3 to 6 players, are now available for download from the Fantasy Flight support page. Set 3,000 years before the events of Twilight Imperium, Rex tells the fateful story of once proud Mechatol City in the months and years following the death of the last Lazax Emperor. Rex is based on a game system originally designed by Bill Eberle, Jack Kitteridge, and Peter Olutka. A game system designed by those three? Why, the only game that comes to mind would be Avalon Hill's Dune. It has been redeveloped for a new audience through the collaborative efforts of Christian T. Peterson, John Goodenow, and Corey Knizia. This engaging game presents players with compelling asymmetrical racial abilities as well as a myriad of opportunities for diplomacy and deception. Download the rules today, then head to your local retailer to place your pre-order for Rex. Waterloo 20 from Victory Point Games was the first title in a series of games featuring low unit density on the map, 20 pieces or less, modest complexity, and dramatic, fast-playing turns. With Napoleon's escape from exile and return to France, his Grand Army is once again on the march. Can the Anglo-Allied forces under Wellington and the Prussian Army under Blücher stop him? Improvements and enhancements to this new edition of Waterloo 20 touch every component, so it's a complete rebirth. It's almost as if it's Waterloo 20 2.0. The map has seen a fresh look at the critical terrain that affects these series games, and so the addition of several small rivers and streams now flow across the landscape. So too were some other geographical features more properly placed, and the setup locations of a few units adjusted. The cards have seen many substitutions to improve the game's narrative, as well as graphics enhancements to bring them up to the latest series standards. The counters have seen the addition of the French Grand Battery Artillery Reserve Unit, the Prussian Advance Guard Cavalry Unit, which begins the game eliminated and awaiting an opportunity to rally, as it was broken earlier slowing down the French approach to Ligny, and a good ground marker to reflect the strong position Blücher defended at Ligny and Wellington found near Waterloo. The rules include historical and variable weather, and a June 18th scenario, the third day, where the pieces begin ready to commence the battles at Wavre and Waterloo. There's even a historical card draw variant for that scenario, for those desiring a more scripted Battle of Waterloo. The new edition of Waterloo 20 is available right now at VictoryPointGames.com. Giachi Uniti Searle is proud to announce the new upcoming release for the game line Stratolibri, the new edition of a classic board game, Blue Max, of which it acquired all international rights. Blue Max is a multiplayer board game of World War I aerial combat over the Western Front during 1917 and 1918. Each player is an Allied or German fighter pilot, and each game allows you to relive a dogfight in which players try to shoot down as many enemy planes as possible without being shot down themselves. The game is played on a hexagonal board using a maneuver chart from which every turn the players decide which move their planes will do. After the planning phase, all the planes are moved simultaneously on the map and all fires are resolved. With initiative and easy-to-learn rules, Blue Max allows you to simulate, with sufficient accuracy, the World War I air combats, and includes everything needed to play. It's a classic board game and first published by Game Designers Workshop, GDW, in 1983, and is named after the prestigious German order Pour le Maitre, informally known as Blue Max. The first Italian edition was published in 1988, and it was the first game published by Stratolibri, followed by a second edition in 1993. On a side note, I happen to own the original 1983 edition from GDW, and it's actually a pretty cool game. Giachi Uniti Searle is preparing then to retrace the steps of this brand of reference for board games, presenting on the market again in this classic air combat, which many, many fans have had over the years. The new edition aims to maintain the spirit of the original setting and make improvements in the mechanical components without upsetting those portions that are the strengths of Blue Max, starting from the format, which will retain the classic shape of the board game. Further details about this publication, the characteristics of the new edition, and the release date will be announced in the future. Blue Max will be published in all major languages and distributed in all countries of reference for the board games market. Well, 2012 is starting off with a bang at Dark Sword Miniatures, and they have 8 new, never-before-seen releases posted on their online store, along with their studio paint job, so you can get a good sneak peek. Dark Sword is also welcoming the following new, to Dark Sword at least, sculptors to the party with their first ever Dark Sword sculpts. Patrick Keith, Bobby Jackson, and Gene Van Horn have now officially joined the Dark Sword Club. These three cool cats are most well known for their Reaper bodies of work. As most of you know, Dark Sword and Reaper are pals, and they dig each other's miniatures big time. So working with these talented folks is a nice tip of the cap to the cool cats at Reaper and their massive miniatures range. I've taken a peek at these new sculpts, and they are pretty sweet. So swing on over to the Dark Sword Miniatures site and check out all the new goodies and the lovely new painted eye candy. For those of you who have heard of Freebooter's Fate, but would like to get a bit more insight into the rules before committing themselves to purchasing them, Freebooter Miniatures has just published the Quick Start Rules for free download on their website. These are the same rules that come with their crew starter boxes, and you do want to note that you still need a set of reasonably priced Freebooter's Fate game cards to use the rules, but at least you'll get an idea of what the game's about. A set of well-thought-out rules is by itself a very good thing indeed, but a game like Freebooter's Fate really comes to life when embedded in a world of its own. And what a world it is. Stalwart Imperials, scurvy pirates, scurrying goblins, shadowy assassins, alluring Amazons, peg legs, parrots, grog, and guns. Imperial order is breaking down. Dry powder, strong steel, and the ability to use both of them effectively are fast becoming the most sought-after commodities, apart from gold and rum, of course. Swing over to the Freebooter Miniatures site to get a glimpse into the world of Freebooter's Fate, which is presented in much more detail in the rulebook, obviously. And finally, although Watchman writer Alan Moore had already let his feelings about new books based on his creation be known over the years and refused to have his name on the credits for the Watchman movie, he didn't hold back when asked by the New York Times what he thought of DC's plan for a group of prequel miniseries. Completely shameless, he said, according to the report. I tend to take this latest development as a kind of eager confirmation that they are still apparently dependent on ideas that I had 25 years ago. Moore also showed the regard in which he holds his magnum opus when he said, "As far as I know, there weren't that many prequels or sequels to Moby Dick." I do have to point out to Alan Moore that, yes, I really dug Watchmen when I first read it 20-some years ago. I even liked the movie. But, hey, Alan, it's no Moby Dick. The path to this point where the writer of his work is estranged to such a significant degree from its publisher has many twists and turns, but the beginning of the story is clear. Moore and Gibbons were expecting to get the rights to Watchmen back after DC published it. While on a panel in 1986, Moore and Gibbons talked about the terms of their contract. They said that after DC had let the material lapse out of print for a year, the rights would revert back to the creators. Of course, that never happened, as Watchmen went through innumerable printings of the trade paperback and other editions. At the time the original series was published, the idea of collecting comic issues into a longer-lived book edition were just forming. Watchmen helped prove the model that transformed the business of selling comic material over the last 20 years. It's not something Moore and Gibbons expected to happen, and it kept the rights at DC from the time of the original series to this very day, and DC's announcement of the Watchmen prequel series. I'm not sure if too many people out there read comic books. I tend to follow them from time to time, depending on what title they are. But I think it would be pretty odd to have a prequel or sequel series of Watchmen without Alan Moore or even Dave Gibbons involved. That's it for today. Monday, kick back with episode 34 of the Gaming Gang podcast, as Elliot and I provide our usual mix of news, views, and reviews, and I'll be back Tuesday with another edition of The Daily Dope. Have a great weekend, everyone, and enjoy the Super Bowl, or at least the commercials, if you don't dig pigskin action. The Daily Dope is presented by The Gaming Gang, located at thegaminggang.com. Any similarities to an actual news program are certainly unintentional and, in fact, accidental.